Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Gamertag Radio is on Play.it.
You can now watch Gamertag Radio live on Twitch.
Get all the latest news and coverage related to the gaming industry.
Join hosts Danny Pena, Paris Lilly, and Peter Toledo.
Don't miss the crew record the podcast live Sundays, 9:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, or Wednesdays, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Get involved with the conversation, send us questions, and be part of the show.
Gamertag Radio.
Follow us, twitch.tv/gamertagradio.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Worldwide.
Podcasting since 2005.
Take it out.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
Back on the scene.
With your host, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Here we go.
All right, welcome to Gamertag Radio, our 700th episode. 700th episode. Amazing. This is your host, Danny, and joining me this week, the whole Gamertag Radio crew. Finally, after all these weeks, we have Paris in the house.
Hey, what's going on? Good morning, everyone. This is a football Sunday for me. Finally, my Tampa Bay Buccaneers get to play. I'm so damn excited. I can't wait. You have no idea how excited I am. But this is also episode 700, and thank you for allowing me to be a part of this journey. This is an amazing accomplishment. So congrats to you, Danny, first and foremost, for taking this thing from episode nothing all the way up to 700. And I'm sure there'll be 700 more in the future.
And this is a celebration for all of us, man, because you guys also been part of this journey and other GTR members from way back in the days, you know. So this is all us, man, all us. And also we have Pete. After all these days, he finally has power back.
Yeah.
No internet though. Yeah. But he's back.
Yeah, I'm here, and I'm thankful for after going through withdrawal of AC and whatnot. It really humbles a person when you've been without power. There's still people, friends of mine, that are in Miami that still don't have power, and it sucks. There's a potential storm coming in the Caribbean following the same path as Irma.
Oh, so, please, no, man. Yeah. Please.
I mean, it's not just us here in South Florida. It's the people in St. Martin, Barbuda, especially that country. Dude, that island disappeared off the face of the earth. There's zero people on that island. So when you take that into account, along with, you know, the no power stuff that happened to us in South Florida, it humbles me. It humbles you. It humbles you. It really does. And, you know, I'm thankful for my corporate MiFi. Shout out to Verizon for that 4G LTE service that's making this possible right now. Go back to what Paris just says, man, thanks to you, man, for making this happen, for making GTR what it is today. You know, yeah, we've all been, as Paris likes to say, you know, he jumps in the backpack, you know, of Trey, but, you know, we all jumped into your backpack to follow this podcast journey. And shout out to you, you know, for making this happen for not just you, but for everybody else here on the team, past and present.
Thanks a lot, man. Thanks. All right. So a couple of things, man. Last night, by the way, before I do a little start promoting the website and everything, last night I finally got to play the raid for Destiny 2. Very interesting. Very hard. I got to the second puzzle with the GTR clan members. By the way, join the Gamertag Raider clan. A lot of fun. And also Truth joined us, man. So it was very, very, it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. It felt very epic, I know, compared to the previous ones, I think, personally. But it was a lot of fun, man. A lot of fun. So shout out to the Noodle. Who else was on it? Fist and a couple other GTR clan members, man. It was a lot of fun, man. A lot of fun. So we tried to do trials, but we're pretty bad. The thing is too hard. Yo, I had Paris watching the stream, making fun of us the whole time, man. And he calling me while we were playing trials. And I'm like, Paris, I'm not picking up. I'm trying to figure this thing out, man. This is too tough for me right now. But it was cool. It was cool.
I'll say this because I know we're going to talk a little bit more about Destiny 2 later in the show. I actually have some criticisms of Destiny 2 that I have to get off my chest, and the raid is going to be one of them. Spoiler alert. So we'll get into that later.
Okay. All right. So head over to gamertagradio.com or play.it/gamertag. Listen to our past episodes. Make sure to share with your friends. Let them know that we already have 700 episodes of the podcast, of all types of interviews, roundtable discussions, debates, coverage. Make sure to spread the word about it. And also, you can watch us live every Sunday morning, 9:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, or Wednesday nights, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Twitch. Go to twitch.tv/gamertagradio. And you can watch us there, man. So
send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com. Or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
So let's go with the first topic, because we couldn't record on Wednesday due to power and the hurricane stuff. So thank God we're back here. So let's talk about PewDiePie. I know we've been seeing a lot of the editorials and a lot of people talking about him on YouTube and in other places too. So who wants to start about this, man? PewDiePie saying the N-word once, and he almost said it again a couple of days ago. But go ahead.
Yeah, let me start it off by saying this. First and foremost, shout out to my brothers and sister over at Spawn on Me, because their podcast, which actually it was on Twitch, so the actual audio should be coming out here in the next day or so. But I was there live on Twitch watching their episode. That couldn't have said it better, the way that they put this whole PewDiePie situation. And also shout out to Austin Walker and Patrick Kleplik and all those guys over at Waypoint Radio, because they had a fantastic take on this as well. I've dealt with hearing that word my entire life, so it's not a shock for me to hear it. It doesn't throw me into outrage to hear it, because I've heard it so much. And I'm from, as I love to say, I'm a grumpy, angry old man from St. Petersburg, Florida. So I'm from the South. So it's no shock for me to hear that word. Yeah. But hearing it from him, and in the context I heard it from him, was so disappointing to me because of who he is and the influence he has globally on people, especially young people. To be in a live stream like that and to be playing a game, and when he got frustrated, that was his go-to word, you know, because that was natural to him. It is obviously something he says all the time. And like I've been saying on Twitter ever since, we have to stop supporting this clown. We really do, because I really don't give a shit if you have 57 million subscribers. I don't care. But you can't be in the position that you're in and just... I say you're racist, personally. As an African-American, you're racist to me, because that word is just too easy for you to say, and you should not be supported. You should lose all your advertisers. And quite honestly, YouTube should kick you to hell off of their service as well. I applaud Camp Santo, you know, the guys, the devs at Firewatch, for saying, you know what? Stop using our game. We don't want our game in your streams anymore. We don't want you talking in the... Excuse me, the videos that you did before, they need to go away as well. And I wish other advertisers and developers would step up and do the same thing. I don't want to see... Look, I was never a fan of PewDiePie anyway, so it doesn't affect my daily life. Like, oh my God, PewDiePie has ruined my image of him. I thought his content was kind of clownish anyways, so it doesn't affect me in that way. But I don't want Trey. I don't want Trey or Kendra to hop on YouTube and be watching PewDiePie. I don't want them to be exposed to the next time he gets upset. He's going to just, hey, you stickers over here. I don't want them exposed to that, you know? Mm-hmm. And like I was kind of saying this, offline, the second time he quote unquote almost said it upset me more than the first time, because the second time was him mocking us. He's openly mocking us now, saying, hey, I'm a millionaire. I didn't lose my advertisers, so now I'm going to have fun with it. And that apology that he put out, complete trash, because
and fake.
It was it. Yeah, hey, fake news. Fake said news. Yeah. Because mm-hmm. it was edited. If that was a sincere apology, you don't need quick edits. You hit record and you start talking from the heart, and that's the way you do it. The fact that it was edited, you could, if you go watch it, you'll see it. I didn't believe one second of it. So no, he's not sincere. He's sad or he's apologizing that he got caught. He's not apologizing that he says the word. And I'm going to be blunt right now. Anyone that supports that nonsense, and this, look, I can't speak for Danny or Pete, but anyone that supports that nonsense, don't follow me on social media. Don't support anything that I do or any of the causes that I have, because obviously we're of completely two different mindsets. And that is just something I will not support ever, to have someone of that influence and that reach being openly racist against people of color. You know, it ain't just black people. You could be Asian, whatever. It's the fact that he can so openly say that word and not care. And that's what it comes down to. And it isn't just this incident. You know, you had the whole, he was making rape jokes all the time. And then that got excused away as, oh, he's just young. He's immature. Don't worry about it. Then he's doing the anti-Semitic stuff with, you know, kill all Jews and all the Nazi paraphernalia and all that. Oh, he's just trying to be funny and edgy and he made a mistake. And then now he does this. And then, like I said, 2 days later, he almost slips up and mocks us. This guy needs to go away. He really does. I would encourage anyone to not support PewDiePie. That's how strongly I feel about this, because I just think we need to send a message that just because you have millions of followers, you can't get away with saying whatever you want. And like I said before, and I'll stop talking, go watch or listen to Spawn on Me. They said it way better than I ever could. And I applaud those guys. And also Waypoint Radio, because Austin Walker just knocked it out of the park with what he had to say as well.
Definitely. And now my question to you guys, do you think Google should do something about this? Because it could also affect other streamers that they're not like that at all. Do you think that will affect their videos or no?
I think they should, but they won't. Because if they were going to do something, they'd have did it already.
Right. So they won't. And at the end of the day, that's advertising dollars, and that's... You know, from a business standpoint, I don't see them ever doing that. From a personal perspective, I think it's horrible. I think it's disgusting. It's unnecessary. The internet is filthy enough as it is, and it doesn't need those things. One of the commentaries on Twitter that I read after it happened originally was someone that said, and actually retweeted it, was like, "Do you know how hard it is to mess up and say something like that when English is your second language? You know how hard it is for someone to do that?" And then, like Paris said, the second time where he slips and then, you know, like, oops, I almost said it. Like, really? Really? And then, you know, comes out with the fake apology thing, the, you know, dressed up as a Nazi. He's doing this as just, you know, it I kind of hearken it going back to, like, you know, the Two Life Crew thing, where, you know, he's using the same metaphor of, any kind of PR is good PR, whether it's good or bad. This might have cost him a couple of hundred subscribers, but he's still going to be raking in the money. And he's still going to be the same person he was before this. He's still going to be a racist. He's still going to use racial epithets like that, you know, in a negative or a demeaning way. And it's filthy. And until people or companies like Camposanto, who did what they did with the DMC takedown of their videos, do more, that's the only way it's going to affect him and make or force change amongst not just people like him, but others that are using this medium as a way to, you know, sustain their personal or their family lives. You know, they need to start stepping up and taking the opportunity to use the tools that we, that, that whether it be publishers or developers have to, you know, to stop streamers, et cetera, from being able to do things and get away with saying these things. It's not right. It's not the right thing to do. And I don't think people are born with being a racist or having racial tendency. It's a taught tendency. Okay.
100%.
100%. Yep. Now the thing that is frustrating to me too, is that, you know, my nephews, they're really young, and a lot of kids, they know about him and they watch his videos. And by him doing that, they see that on YouTube and they're like, oh, they think it's okay for them to say that now, you know, cause they're going to get influenced by him, you know? So that's the frustrating part of me, man. Like, every time I see that, like, oh my, every time my nephew mentions that, it drives me insane, man. I'm like, nah, man, don't watch his videos, watch something else. But they think it's cool because he's like the popular YouTuber, you know? So I don't know, man. We like you said, Paris, like, you know, you don't want your kids to watch that, but they could easily start watching him without even telling you, just because he's like the popular guy, you know? So they think that it's okay for them to see PewDiePie and other YouTubers that there are popular doing that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And that's my bigger concern. Look, I'm 43 years old, so it's like him saying that word isn't going to affect my life or ruin my life. It's the younger people that I'm concerned with, because, you know, our good friend who works on Assassin's Creed that we know, well, I'm sure we'll see him next week. But he was engaged in a Twitter thing with I'm assuming this is a young person defending PewDiePie. And I didn't say anything. I just observed the twit line saying that, you know, hey, I have black friends and they let me say that word, so it's okay. You know, I can go around and say it. No, it's not okay. Because just because that one black friend says it's okay to call him that word doesn't mean all of us say it's okay to use that word. And I don't think kids should get comfortable with that word, because that word has such a higher level meaning to so many different people around the world. You know, for me, I hear that word, I immediately think racism. Immediately. Because that's what that word was used for hundreds of years here in the United States, right? Mm-hmm. Around the world, it could mean something else. That's fine. But right now, today, that word is a symbolism of racism and hate. So when you casually use that word, you don't know who people are. So you can't say that to a stranger and expect them to say that it's okay, because it affects us all in different ways. Sure. Look, amongst my quote unquote crew, have we used that word? Yes. But like Ice Cube said on Bill Maher, when Bill Maher threw that word out casually, that's our word. You don't get to use it anymore, because you used it for hundreds of years as hatred. So if we've taken that word back and then used it as a level of empowerment amongst each other, that's okay. But with that said, I don't walk out of this house saying that word just casually running around. I don't scream to the heavens like, hey, I'm black, so I can use that word. No, because I don't say it because I don't want other people to say it to me. It's as simple as that. You know, I don't want my kids saying it. Look, I'm going to be real with you. My oldest actually used that word one time and I freaking went off on her, because I had to explain to her this. Look, I live in suburbia, black, white, Asian, Mexican, Filipino. We all get together. We all love each other. Right. So I don't experience racism where I live in Southern California to that level anymore. Right. So my kids don't experience it, because like you said, racism is taught. It's not born. You're not born with it. So all these kids in my neighborhood right now, they don't experience it on that level. They all play and hang out with each other. But the music that they listen to, the people that they watch on YouTube, throw that word out there. So they think it's OK. So I had to educate my oldest on that. No. You will not walk out of this house using that word, because the second that it's thrown back in your face, you're going to be upset. You know what I mean? So that's kind of the biggest thing that I say. Don't be a hypocrite with it. Don't use that word saying, all right, it's okay to use amongst my friends. But then the second someone that you don't know says it to you and you get upset, there's a level of hypocrisy right there. So that's why, look, don't say something that you don't want to hear back. So yes, I have used that word in the past amongst my friends, amongst my African-American friends. But now as an angry old man, I don't use that word anymore because I don't want to hear it. And I think that's the biggest thing with PewDiePie is he should not be saying that word because, look, we know there are 57 million people out there that watch him every day. And you're now saying it's OK to use that word when hell no, it's not. And I wouldn't want my kids or any of my friends to use it either.
Yeah. See, and I'm going to keep it real. You know, I grew up.
Hold on. Pause a second. I know we don't acknowledge Twitch all the time, but I'm going to acknowledge it right now. Cyber Gorilla, just like I said, black people have used that word in our community, but that does not make it okay. And it especially does not make it okay for people that aren't in the African-American community to use that. That's my whole point. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't even be using that word. But guess what? If we do use that word, we use it as a symbol of empowerment. That's the whole point. We've taken the word back and made it our own. That does not make it okay for other races to use it because when they use it, they're using it as a symbol of racism and hate. That is the whole point I'm trying to make right now. So, again, we need to get away from just like no one wants a swastika or a freaking Klan hood, you know, or burning cross out in front of their house. Same as a black person doesn't want that word said to them. And that's what it really comes down to. Life isn't freaking fair. I get it. You know, words are just words. They shouldn't hurt us. But guess what? They freaking do. And that's just a fact. So, again, that word should not be used in any context anymore. I know it is in the world because the world is not perfect. But the point is, someone like PewDiePie should not be saying that word because he used it as a symbol of frustration. And like he even said in his own fake apology, he was frustrated. So he was thinking of what was the most hateful word he could possibly use to say. And that was the word. And that is the whole problem.
And look, you know, I grew up in, you know, New York City. I'm from there. You know, I listen to a lot of like hip hop, 90s hip hop. And Paris, let's be real. Like, dude, when we were all young, we were like that because we thought it was okay for us to say that. You know, we see all these rappers saying this, you know, and I stopped using that a long time ago. And I said it because as part of the hip hop community, it's not like I'm trying to be racist or anything like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, but I learned for me not to say that. A very long time ago, I stopped, you know, getting that from like Nas, Wu-Tang and all these other cats, you know, Ice Cube and all that. But, yeah, I stopped using that long time ago, man. You know, so, Pete.
Can't say any better than what you guys have said. And like Paris said earlier, the guys have spun on me and Austin Walker. And, you're never going to get away from using that word until everyone stops using that word. And I totally understand that, you know, African-Americans have taken that word back as a way of empowerment. But until we stop using the word period, regardless of who you are, it's never going to stop. And unfortunately, you know, racism is going to continue until people understand that there isn't a race. We're all the human race, and that's how it should be. Shouldn't make a difference whether I'm yellow, Danny is light brown, or Paris is black. It shouldn't make a difference, right? We're the human race. We're all humans, and that's the only race that we should be concerned about on this planet. It's disgusting, and it annoys the hell out of me that someone like him isn't really going to take any injustice or anything negative as, you know, as a form of punishment for what he's done. Cause this isn't the first time that PewDiePie has been in the public eye as a result of any of this, you know, whether it be racist, you know, talk or anything like that. It's not the first time. And as we've seen, it's not going to be the last time because it hasn't negatively affected him. So he needs to be punished. Whether I'm not going to condone physical violence, but I'm pretty sure that if he tried to use that hard R in the presence of some of my friends, you know, like Paris or some of the friends that I grew up with down in Miami, you know, I'm pretty sure that he would get his ass kicked. And, you know, someone like him using that deserves to get his ass kicked, whether it be physically or in this case, financially, from whether it be YouTube or Twitch or any of the publishers or sponsors that work on his stuff. So that's all I'm going to say.
Let's go with our brand new sponsor because I'm excited about this. You know, I'm a huge Big Brother fan, so of course I use CBS All Access, right, to watch the live stream and everything. But there's an exclusive content coming out very, very soon for CBS All Access members. Paris, this is all you, man.
All right, let's take a break from the 700th episode of Gamertag Radio and let's talk about Star Trek. One of the most iconic and influential global television franchises returns 50 years after it first premiered with Star Trek Discovery. The CBS All Access original series features a new ship, new characters, and new missions, while embracing the same ideology and hope for the future that inspired a generation of dreamers and doers. Star Trek Discovery is available exclusively on CBS All Access and premieres September 24th at 8:30 Eastern, 5:30 Pacific. Stream the world premiere live, then watch the next episode on demand immediately after. CBS All Access subscribers can watch the epic journey unfold every Sunday across devices. So start your free trial now at cbs.com/Star Trek. Now let's go back to episode 700 of Gamertag Radio.
All right, so thank you to our sponsor. All right, so let's talk about this, man, because I had a conversation with Paris about this over the phone a couple days ago about the whole controversy that's going on with Dean Takahashi. This happened a couple weeks ago, you know, because of the whole hurricane, we couldn't really talk about it a lot. But he went to a press event, and they had Cuphead, playable there. It was like a whole Cuphead event and everything. And, you know, usually when journalists, media folks that go to this event, they could capture their gameplay footage, right? And they have the option to post it online, maybe put short clips, whatever. So he had a hard time playing that game. I read through his tutorial that he skipped all the tutorial instructions, how to play and all that stuff. So he started playing, and he couldn't go, like, the game was too tough for him, too hard for him. So he was, like, undecided, man, should I post this video online or not? Because, you know, it looks ridiculous. So his friends, his coworkers were like, go for it. I think you should post it because it looks funny. So he posted this video online. And everybody started bashing him online, saying, Why you're a journalist, you're a gaming journalist and all that stuff. You suck as a gamer and all that stuff. And then it was death threats and so on. And it was just like too much over something that it was too hard, which we've been through that many times in the past. And the situation got really, really bad, you know. So he had to go online and defend himself and everything. And, you know, Dean has been on our show in the past. For those that don't know, go listen to our older episodes from way back in the days. He was on our show. And, you know, he's a well-known, respected gaming journalist. And we see him every time we go to E3 or gaming events. I always see Dean. And he's always been a huge supporter of GTR. And it's frustrating seeing that. You know, I'm not saying that every person needs to be a professional gamer in order for them to review a game. Or, you know, there's people like us that we're hardcore. And there's others that are just casual folks, you know what I'm saying? So your thoughts about this, guys, because I think personally I think it was just too much. And then seeing, you know, people posting his personal information online, death threats and everything, it was just too much in my opinion, man. Like, really, just because he couldn't really play Cuphead that well, really, you're gonna take it to that level? I personally think it was very tacky for people to start doing that, man. But yeah, go ahead, any opinion about that?
I see both sides of the argument, but I do lean towards, you know, it's his job, obviously, to play games, but you have to understand, and this actually goes into a larger conversation, but on this specifically, we are the minority by a huge percentage of gamers, because we're hardcore passionate gamers, right? The vast majority are casual gamers. And that's what he represents, is the way I look at it. He's a casual gamer. He's a casual gamer, but he's in a position that he's talking about games. And I don't think he should be expected to be an absolute pro at a game. I think he can give an opinion on a game from the casual gamer's point of view, and that's fine. Dean Takahashi does not have to be your only source for gaming opinions, right? If anything, you can use him as a gauge to see, all right, he has a casual point of view. And then, I don't know, someone like us, we have a more hardcore point of view. And then obviously you got the polygons and et cetera and all those in the world. I do think looking at it on the other side, though, he should at least have a basic understanding of the game if instructions are right in front of him. I understand most gamers aren't going to read the instructions. You're just going to jump in and try and figure it out. But if he's having a hard time with the game and he's struggling with it, pick up the instructions that are right in front of you, maybe read those, give it another shot. If it's still too hard for you, then he can have that educated opinion on it, because, you know, he is in that position where people are going to read his opinion. So, like I said, I see both sides of it. I think this extreme, like you're saying, Danny, death threats and all that, that is just absolutely ridiculous. None of that should ever be happening. So, no, he should not be catching that much heat for this. But he should be held to a standard of, you know what, if you're going to go to an event and play a game, and this was a Microsoft event, and they're saying, here's the instructions on how you play. If you refuse to read those instructions or go through a tutorial, then I don't think he should actually be criticizing said game, because you didn't use every resource available to make sure that you can understand what you were playing.
Yeah, totally agree with that. Totally agree. I just feel bad. You know, the whole situation is going on, you know, and then I see, you know, people on Reddit posting other things like, oh, look at these him playing other games. And then I don't know. Personally, to me, Dean is more of like a casual guy. Yeah, he's a fan of gaming, but he's not like a hardcore gamer like us, you know. So he's just doing this thing. He's doing his job, you know. And honestly, I'd rather see, you know, a lot of journalists like Dean, instead of all these trolls posting these comments and everything. And actually, that one of them posted something like, look, I apologize, Dean. The reason why I'm saying all these things is because, you know, I'm jealous that you have a job like this and I don't. And I'm just like mad and I'm saying all these crazy things online just because you're in this situation. That's the thing. A lot of people just like to wait until when you have like a bad situation going on. They take advantage of that and they trash you even more online so they could look good and cool while everybody else also doing the same thing to you. You know what I'm saying? It's like, dude, man, it's just too much in my opinion.
100% agree.
Yeah.
He's one of those writers that honestly, in my opinion, should probably get a pass for this at the end of the day. You know, he's been in this industry for so long. He's written thousands upon thousands of amazing game articles. He takes one L. Is this really worth the negativity and the vitriol that he's taken as a result? Yeah, fine. He skipped through the instructions. Who here has ever not skipped the instructions just to get straight into the gameplay? Nobody has. Maybe 0.01 of 1%. Of the people sit there and go through every single instruction or every single tutorial in every game they've ever played. Come on, let's be frank. Is it really worth all of the negativity that he's taken as a result from doing this? I don't know. That's just my personal opinion. I think he's done more good in this industry and it does not deserve this. Yeah, it sucks. Yeah, we may not agree with some of his reviews in the past, like the Mass Defect one, which is what everybody called it, because apparently when he did his review of Mass Effect, he never actually leveled up his character like appropriately. He just went through it straight through and never, you know, adjusted his perks or what have you. But at the end of the day, you know, he's contributed so much to the industry as a whole, as a writer, that, you know, People take L's, and I don't think this one really at the end of the day should be considered an L. It's again, it's the end of, at the end, it's the internet being the internet.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go to the next topic, and it's time for Destiny Talk Radio. All right. So let's talk about this. There's been a lot of conversations about things that's going on, the good and the bad about the game. I'll say from my point of view to you guys, you know, I'm addicted, man, now playing Destiny. The first one I tapped out a long time ago and so on. And I'm having a blast with this one. So there's things that they added in the game that I think personally for me, as someone that didn't play much in the first one, like I did a lot of things. Like I've done raids, multiple raids and everything from the last one. But compared to P in Paris, I tapped out a long time ago, right? So the things that they add in the new game, I think it was good I so far. Like, you know, the clan feature where we all work together as a community from our clans members and we could unlock stuff together. Like I'm very excited. Every time I go on, I check out our clan page to see how we're doing stats wise. You know, we're getting a lot of points, experience points for us to level up to number 3 and so on. We're doing different things when I'm playing different side quests or playing Crucible or Strike. I see like a little icon saying, oh, your clan XP points, like you see on the side. And I'm like, oh man, somebody's playing. That's good. Doesn't matter which console you're playing. We all contribute in some way, you know. There's people that are fans, like hardcore fans from the previous game. They're kind of getting mad that there's certain things in the game that is like too easy for those for everybody. Like, for example, how to find Xur, too easy. The clan thing, unlocking special items, special drops for all clan members, even if they're not doing like the raids or other things, they think it's just too easy. They need to work. Now, for me, that I don't have that much time to play these games, I think it's fine, man. And I think this is going to help other people that never play the first one. It's going to get them more involved with the game, and they're going to be more curious about Destiny 2. So by doing all these things, I feel like it's great for everybody. You know, the hardcore are still going to be playing Destiny, but I think the new folks that are going to come and buy this game, that's going to help the game even become even more popular, you know. And at the same time, it's going to help Bungie and Activision get more money back, invest that for this game, for other future content, and maybe also for Destiny 3 and so on. So I think it's great, man. You know, it just it's kind of like not frustrated, but it's kind of like disappointed to see that from a lot of the hardcore fans that they're not happy with it. But the ones that are not hardcore fans, they're very happy with all this type of content that they'll be adding, you know. Now, don't get me wrong. Other things like microtransaction, that's another discussion. But I'm talking about just features like this, like, you know, that just add in this game. But Paris or P, whoever wants to start from there, we go for it.
I don't want to make this a formal review of the show or of the game, because
no,
I think
this is not a review. Yeah,
I think we're all going to have those. We'll all have, you know, different opinions on things like that. I like what they've added to an extent. In what you're saying there, you know, there's not going to be a perfect Destiny 2, I think, at this point, but I like what I've seen so far. I think it's a great progression from the original Destiny. It's definitely been a slow burner for me. It didn't catch me and pull and hook me in as the original did, but I like the direction that they've taken it. They've made it a lot more inclusive for people, whether it be friends or random people. Hell, I've probably played with more random people in the last 24 hours. People from the clan, people from the GTR Discord community, than I've ever played in the past. That it probably includes PUBG. I mean, it's been great. I've had a lot of fun, and shout out to Bungie for dropping it, you know, like it's hot. Because it's definitely been a slow burn for me. It hasn't hooked me, and I think that's more of a game decision by them. But the whole Tess Everest thing, the Everest Marketplace, I think that is a big wallet warrior decision, and I don't know if that's the right way to go forward. I get the whole shaders and stuff like that, but you do get weapon drops. And I don't know, that kind of takes away that mystique and awe of trying to hope for RNG. And there's people, because I know there's games like Warframe. Warframe is something that went heavy wallet warrior methodology, in my opinion. And you definitely could buy your way to success. I mean, and at the end of the day, you can kind of see that same similarity in Ghost Recon Wildlands, as great as a game as that is. But I mean, I started off the game, and within 15 minutes, I wallet warriored my way into having nearly every gun in the game just because I had the opportunity to. So, I don't know.
All right. Paris?
Well, like Pete said, this is definitely not a review. I'll start it by saying this way. You guys know I freaking love Destiny. I'm very ingrained into that community, and my opinions may or may not be biased. So with that said, I could talk about what I love about the game all day, but I'd rather focus on what I don't like about Destiny 2. And I kind of talked about this a couple weeks ago, coming from the preview. First and foremost, the shader economy. While I have a ton of shaders, I get it. They're, you know, that isn't the issue that I'm getting shaders. I don't like how it's set up being consumable, and that they come from Eververse, and that while you can play the game and not have to spend a freaking dime, they've tied it into microtransactions because you can buy bright engrams and they drop from there. I don't like that this consumable economy, this consumable item is tied to that economy, excuse me. And look, there's arguments back and forth on it. I get it. It does not affect me because I just play the game. I will never drop a dime on Eververse. I just don't like that Bungie and Activision continually pushes that edge with microtransactions and the whole Eververse thing. I don't like it. I do understand why they do it, because look, at the end of the day, this is a business. It's about making money. And if people are crazy enough to go out there and spend, throw money at a situation because they want to get mods and shaders and these cool little ghosts and, you know, the emotes and all that, I get it. If you want to do it, God bless you. I just will never be a part of that. Another thing that I'm not necessarily happy with would be Xur. I look right at Danny when I say it. Would be Xur. And here's why. I feel that it's a lost opportunity for Xur. And let me preface this by saying it. I understand that Xur is there for the casual player so that they have a chance at exotic items and gear that they probably wouldn't have the time investment to be able to hopefully get it via RNG by playing the game. I understand that. But if you're going to stick Xur out in the world, they could have made this a community event. Every Friday, in my opinion, could be like, where's Xur? And I understand that it's mostly going to benefit streamers and YouTubers because they're going to jump on right at 2 a.m. or whenever Xur shows up, you know, Friday morning, and they're going to start searching the world for Xur. Everyone else, probably including myself, is just going to Google the damn thing and then go right to where Xur is. But the point is, you could have had some sense of exploration with it. It could have been another layer of community engagement with Xur. Because if you're going to stick him out in the world and just put a marker on him and say, go here, stick his ass right in the middle of the tower every week. What's the difference? Because you're, in other words, I don't care if you're exploring the world. I'm just showing you exactly where Xur is. So he might as well just be in the town square every week, shows up, just raining exotics. Because to me, I understand that you give it to casual players. So if that's all Xur is there for, why even promote going out in the world to find Xur is my point. Because the way I look at it is previously in the original Destiny, he showed up in one of the towers and, or, you know, social spaces, the Tower of the Reef. And yeah, you kind of would have to walk around for a couple minutes or so to find him, but you would find him. And I don't think it was ever that difficult, but maybe the numbers that Bungie showed that a lot of people were missing out on Xur. They just didn't know where he was and he wasn't being engaged enough. So if that's the whole reason they're doing this, totally get it. Again, doesn't affect me because I would have found Xur every week anyways, because I'm a hardcore player. And I think that's the one thing that a lot of people that have complaints, including myself, need to understand what Bungie is doing. They want more people like Danny playing the game. They want to hold your hand. I think there's too much hand holding, which is my point, but I understand holding our hands to a certain point to get more people engaged to play. And, you know, shout out over to the Destiny Community Podcast and Pope Bear, because they had Datto on this week. And I listened to that conversation that they had about the clan rewards, and Datto was against it. Pope Bear was for it, and they had a nice healthy discussion about it, and I really enjoyed it. And I lean more towards what Pope Bear was saying. You have these clan rewards, and explain clan rewards. So if you're a part of a clan, now when people complete certain things, when you hit a milestone in the Crucible, or you complete a Nightfall, or you complete the raid, or you complete trials, if you're a part of that clan, then everyone in the clan gets a reward from that. So like, for example, with the raid now, if you complete the raid, people will get a low power level piece of raid gear. Or if you complete trials, people will get a low level piece of trials gear. And to me, I think that's great, because people that don't experience the raid or don't experience trials will get a piece of gear from it. They can infuse it up to a higher level. They can use it and are like, oh my God, this is really cool. I really enjoy this. This may now inspire them to want to go into trials or go into the raid or go do a Nightfall. Whereas in the past, they may have been too intimidated or felt like they couldn't do it. But you know what? You're a part of a clan now. There's guided games now. There's more avenues to get the casual player into these in-game activities, which I think is the whole point. So I'm all for it. I agree with what Pope Bear was saying about it. And I think that's an example of, I like the hand holding from Destiny, because it's going to encourage more people to jump into those activities. I've been in the guided games beta now. So I did that. I actually guided someone through the Nightfall. They had a great experience with it. And I think now that person is going to, oh my God, I need to go join a clan because I want to do more of these activities. So when I look at it from that standpoint, I totally get it. I'm happy with it, and it's fine. But like I said, I look at something like Xur, I look at the microtransactions. To me, those with the shaders, and I feel those are lost opportunities that Bungie could have tweaked, which, to say, that's the beauty of this game. This will not be the same game a year from now that we're playing right now. So they will listen to community feedback. We will see tweaks coming out, and the game will evolve just as it has the past 3 years. Now, two more nitpicks I have, and then I'll shut up.
Okay. Yeah.
Another one is that I felt they brought back too many old exotics, which was a disappointment to me. I wanted to see more. Look, and there's some great new weapons out there. Don't get me wrong. Nameless Midnight. Just remember that name. It's a legendary scout rifle. That thing is freaking fire in the raid. Just trust me on that. And there's many other weapons out there. But I felt they brought back too many of the Destiny 1 exotics, which again was, I understand they had to hit the reset button to get into Destiny 2, but as much as I love Mida Multitool, and I freaking love Mida Multitool because I used the hell out of it in Destiny 1. That was the gun I used when I finally went to the lighthouse, you know, in trials. I was happy and disappointed at the same time that it came back in Destiny 2, because I felt it was a crutch, and as we're seeing right now in the Crucible, it is a crutch again. And the statistics from Destiny Tracker bear it out. Everyone's using damn Mida Multitool. Now, look, the Mida Mini Tool is freaking fire. I love that submachine gun. That's a great new weapon to put in there, and maybe that's what it should have been. The Mida name lives on, but you do it with the Mini Tool. Don't bring back the Mighty Multitool. You know what I'm saying? So Hard Light came back, some other weapons came back, and I'm like, ah, come on, give us some more variety. And again, I understand this is early days. You know, there was probably a lot of people, casual players, that never got a chance to use these weapons of Destiny 1, so you bring them back. Look, I'm sure Gjallarhorn's going to come back, things like that. But I wanted to see more variety with the exotic weapons. I feel like the legendary weapons, they've done a great job with mixing that up, and I feel there's a nice variety of different weapons people can use, take them into PvP, use them in the raids, etc., like that. So that's that nitpick. Final nitpick, and I'm probably going to catch some heat for this one.
Okay.
This is the worst raid they've ever put out. I don't like it. I think, again, another missed opportunity for them. This raid, look, there's some fun moments in it, don't get me wrong, but if I had to rank them, this is at the bottom of the list for me. I felt even Crota's End, which would have been my least favorite raid to this point, felt, while it was short, it felt more exciting to me. Whereas this one, and again, I don't want to get into spoilers or anything, but the encounters were a little disappointing to me. I felt that they made, and this is a very mechanics heavy versus boss heavy raid. I'll say this minor spoiler. Technically, there's only one boss fight in the game, which I felt was a little disappointing to me. again, I don't want to spoil things. It's very mechanic heavy, which is great because that's the whole point of the raid. Six players getting a co-op experience, having to communicate to figure out a problem, all these puzzles. So that's fine. I just felt like this raid could have been more, and I hope this is a one-off for what Destiny is doing raid-wise. I to me, the blueprint is always going to be the Vault of Glass for a raid, where you have boss fights, you have jumping puzzles, you have these different mechanic things that you need to do. That's what I personally like to see from a Destiny raid. I think King's Fall followed up on that very well, and even to a lesser degree, Wrath and Machine. Whereas to me, this one, the Leviathan, was a step back. Excuse me, Bungie Ninja's getting me now. Like, shut up, Paris. I'm a little disappointed in it. And when I say I'm disappointed in it, I don't feel that desire to run this multiple times to run. And look, maybe there's something different in prestige mode that'll change my mind. I really hope so. But I'm not going to have that pull to want to do this raid every week over and over and over again. Look, I'm going to get trade through it. We'll do the hard mode. We'll do all that. But I don't, unless there's just some raid gear out there that just I absolutely gotta have, there's not gonna be that desire for me to play this raid just to play the raid, because that's how it was, like, especially during King's Fall. I would play King's Fall just to play it because I love those encounters that we had. I wasn't even doing it for the gear. Whereas this one, if I'm gonna do it multiple times, it's gonna just be for the gear and that's it. So to me, that's probably my biggest disappointment coming out of Destiny 2, was I had such high hopes for this raid, and just being honest, it felt like a letdown to me. Just it did.
All right. Well, I just want to say something very quick before we go to our big interview here. So the other day I went online, and I've been still doing the whole adventure and different patrols and so on in Destiny 2. So when I went to one of the planets and I'm like, what is that icon? It says XU, right? Is it? That's what the icon is? I can't remember exactly. Because I didn't know that Xur was going to pop up that day.
It's 1X.
And I got excited. Like
Roman numeral 9.
Oh, all right. I didn't know. So I got excited. Like, oh, man, did I unlock something? Like, what is this? And I went there and I was like, oh, snap, it's this cat. Welcome back. Like, you know, and the person that didn't play much of the first game, I was okay with having him, and I believe was Nessus on top of the tree, looked like a bootlegger trying to sell these illegal items. So I got excited. So when I go online and see people complaining about, oh man, this is not cool, it's too easy, they should not have the icon there. I was like, I don't know. Like I personally, every week when I start playing Destiny 1, I had to like either look it up on Twitter or look it up on Google in order for me to know where the hell he's at, because I was always running around, and sometimes I'll probably will miss him while running around looking for him. And there's people like me like that they just don't have the time to be searching on Twitter or searching through Google. So that's why I said it's okay for me, seeing that I got excited thinking, because I totally forgot, I didn't know he was going to be there. I got excited thinking, man, I unlocked something. So when I went there, I remember, oh, snap, today's Friday. This is his first time now in the game and so on. So that's what I was trying to say. I just don't find it fun searching for him every single week. And when I get tired of it, I'm like, oh, let me look it up online. Now, there's other people that probably are brand new to this game. They don't even know who this person is, who this character is. And to them, this is going to be something new to them too, man. So imagine not having an icon. They never read the PR press release from the PR saying, oh, go to Xur, find them on this planet. Or they don't go to Bungie.net and check out the weekly news. How are they going to know? How are they going to know that they can easily find this character and get these drops and engrams and all that stuff, man? Like, they're not going to know. That's what I'm trying to say. From a person that doesn't go, like the casual person, they just buy because they see the commercial on TV. Those type of people I'm talking about.
And I get that. And I get that. 100% get that. That's what I was even saying. I understand Xur is a mechanic for the casual gamer. And it's kind of what you're saying, that you didn't want to go search for him. I totally get that as well. Most people defaulted to just Googling it anyways, right?
Mm-hmm.
I almost, and I know it's a slippery slope because Bungie's done a great job of pulling a lot of these things back into the game where you don't have to leave the game to find out information about stuff like with lore and all that. So obviously they don't want people to have to leave the game to find Xur or to unknow what Xur is. I almost feel here's my happy medium to it. I think you have a message every Friday morning. Xur is here on Nessus. Go find him. Right. The streamers are going to go find him. They are. And you you build a mechanic or something where he's always going to be around one of the public events or something like that. So it at least say, hey, you go out, you explore for a little while, you look for him. He's around a public event. It's going to encourage you to go into the world, do public events, do things in the world, and then you'll find him. I don't know. And like I said, I understand Bungie did what they had to do because it was a smart play to put a marker on there and just say, go here. Everyone knows where he is. But at that same time, what I'm saying is if that's what they're going to do to play it safe, just put him in tower.
So, and I mentioned this while you and the three of us were talking yesterday. I think, A, you have to make it rewarding enough for people to go to Xur, right? And this is my personal opinion. Some people may not agree. Some people may think, nah, it's too much work. I think in order to be able to get to Xur, to be able to spend your bright dust or whatever it is to, you know, because obviously there's no strange coins anymore. In order to get to him, to be able to get those new things, whether it be exotics or what have you, go through an adventure or a public event, something that makes it worthwhile, that encourages and empowers the player to be like, boom, I got to Xur, as opposed to, you know, even if it's like, I think, you know, a patrol or something. It doesn't even have to be as difficult as an adventure, because obviously an adventure is a little bit more time consuming, but it makes it that much more rewarding to the player by saying, boom, I got through this adventure. Now I got to Xur. Now I'm getting all this dope gear that I normally may or may not have gotten as a regular drop, because RNG is stingy as F, right? But making it super rewarding, I'll be almost kind of like getting through the raid. And the thing about what Paris was saying earlier, kind of, I haven't played the raid, but you know, getting lower levels, you know, raid gear, I think is counterproductive, I guess, but that could be a separate discussion. But sticking with the Xur stuff, I would have loved to have seen them make it that much more rewarding, because you're going through the game and getting a progression level completed in order to access Xur, as opposed to just, you know, like, here you go, here's Xur, go spend your bright dust and go get your stuff. I just think they missed a big opportunity for gamers, and it doesn't have to be super difficult. It could be a super simple adventure, but, you know, just here's a spot on the map and go get your stuff was kind of lazy.
Yeah, I think. Maybe I'm wrong. You guys tell me if I'm wrong or not.
You're wrong.
I think because there's a lot of I think there's a lot of you're a dork. I think because there's a lot of new people that are just started to play Destiny 2. Bungie's having it like this for a while. Get to know the character, right? Get to know the character maybe during Thanksgiving weekend or maybe you know, maybe near the holidays. We'll see something in the milestone when you go to the destinations, right? And they'll say, find Xur, like on this planet, right? And if you find them, you get a brand new gear and so on, like something cool, you know? Like, I think maybe it's that. Maybe there won't be no icon, and you have to find them in a different planet, you know? Like, have like a special event, and everybody is going to see that, and they'll unlock the new milestone and so on, and I think they could do that. This is more of like an introduction. Like, this is him. This is his icon. But eventually, we're going to have special events that you have to find them. And that's possible, too.
See, and while I would love that, excuse me. God, Bungie's like, dude, you talking negative about this game, we're going to get you. I do agree with you that I would love to see something like that. But kind of like I was saying before, This Xur was built to get casual gamers exotic gear. That's what it was for. So if you can't put in the time and the effort to go do these in-game activities, get exotic gear, that's what the Zerg mechanic is for, right? So ultimately, as much as I'm complaining about it, I think what Zerg is today won't change. It's going to be an icon. You go to the planet, you get your stuff, you have your legendary shards to buy it, you're out. I don't think that'll ever change, to be perfectly honest, unless there's just a complete uprising from the community demanding change to Zerg, because, you know, like we said, Bungie does listen to it. And since I'm talking, let me just be crystal clear, because I'm sure people have probably driven off the road because I'm actually talking negative about Destiny. I absolutely love the game. I mean, don't get me wrong at all. I'm loving the quality of life changes that Bungie has made from Destiny 1 to Destiny 2. Like I've alluded to before, this feels more closer to that vision they had back in 2013 for the original Destiny. So I'm very happy. I mean, the gunplay is top notch. It's top tier, as it has been, you know, from day one. So there's nothing wrong with the gunplay. I'm loving the Crucible personally, just the different scenarios now, the changes that they've made with the 4v4 that I was against at first, but now I get it. So I am happy with the gunplay in the Crucible. I love the adventures. I love the treasure maps. I love the lost sectors. I love the new mechanics with the public events. I love the strikes, man. The strikes have been fantastic so far that I've done. I love that these bosses now have more raid type mechanics to them versus just being bullet sponges. Maybe they could have added a few of those bosses into the raid. Maybe I'd be more happy about that. But overall, I'm loving what Destiny is. We've obviously seen a sneak peek to what the DLC that's coming with Osiris in December, you know, with Mercury and all that. So overall, I'm happy. I'm still fully engaged in the game. I don't see me slowing down on it anytime soon. I've already had my father-son highlight moment, you know, where Trey and I, along with Andrew from the show Radio, we did the Rat King quest together. So when we did that strike, And we were actually, and I actually have it on Twitter, we're actually under the 5-minute threshold, and I'm taking down the boss, and then I'm like, kill enemies, we got to get it back up. And then we literally got it right to 501 as I took down the boss, and we just started screaming. And I'm like, that's Destiny. That's why I play this freaking game, because that raw excitement that I had, it was all real. It wasn't PewDiePie where I had to edit it, make you think I was apologizing. It was legit enthusiasm and joy for being able to accomplish, you know, that quest. That's why I love Destiny. Even though I may not be the biggest fan of this raid, you know, there were those wow moments in that as well. And it's why I'll keep coming back to this game over and over, because I do love it. And we'll probably have a full review maybe next week, I'm thinking, because then that'll give me a chance to get a second time through the raid. Maybe my opinion might change a little bit. We'll see. But I can then say confidently by next week, I've experienced everything in game in Destiny 2.
All right. So we're going to play this exclusive podcast interview with the voice cast for Far Cry 5. And that's coming out early next year, the game. So I'm very excited about this. This was recorded in Seattle when we were there. And we're going to play it right now. And once we come back, we're going to wrap it up. We'll be right back after this.
Back on the scene.
This is Gamertag Radio.
This is Peter, Danny, and Paris here with Gamertag Radio, here with Martin Roach, the voice of Pastor Jerome Jeffries from Far Cry 5. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
So tell me a little about yourself, the role that you're playing in Far Cry 5, and what drew you to the character.
I'm playing Pastor Jerome, as you just said. He is an Afghanistan vet, a Gulf War vet, who's come back to the States and become a preacher. And now this cult has come into his area over in Montana, and he sees it as a pretty bad thing. And so it takes him a while to get to it, but he basically becomes a leader of the resistance. So he's pulled back into his old ways. He's taken up arms again. So he's a little, I guess you could say he's a little at odds with himself, but he knows this is what he's got to do because it's what's right. So it's kind of nice to pull into a character like that, because he's not necessarily definite about it. As much as he is definite, he still has questions about it.
And how was your reaction reading the script?
Oh, hell about yeah. The character? Oh, hell yeah.
You're like, I'm in it. Oh, that's yeah. It.
When I got the script, I freaked. I got it like the day before we started recording, and I started flipping through everything. I'm just like, yeah, this is it. This is going to be so much fun. And it is.
So, you know, my thing, this is obviously all fictional, Hope County, everything, but there are some real world relevancy to what's going on in this. So you, as a voice actor, like you said, you read the script and you're like, hell yeah, this looks very interesting. But from your perspective, as Pastor Jerome, I get that he's like, all right, call to arms. I want to lead the resistance and all that. But at the same time, I'm like, these crazy people in Hope County, why doesn't he just get the hell, like, why not just get the hell out of there? I mean,
I don't think he gets the hell out of there because he's found a place. You know, I think when people have gone through wars, they come home lost. If you talk to a lot of vets, they are lost from any war. Mm-hmm. And if somebody actually finds a place, that's theirs. People like to defend their homes. They don't want to be forced out of their homes, right, by something evil. And he has the wherewithal. He has the ability to defend that home. And he feels the responsibility. These are his people. He's their leader. He's one of their community leaders. So it's like, what do we do as a community leader? Do you just go, yeah, well, we got to go? Or you go, hey, no, wait a minute. This is one of those things that's worth fighting for. And quite frankly, he also sees it as, if we don't stop these people, who the hell will?
From a voice talent perspective, curious, do you have any influences that you drew upon when coming up with the concept of how you were going to voice, your mannerisms?
Oh, yeah. I try to pull upon old black preachers and war movies that I've seen. You know, I try to portray that Navy SEAL with a conscience, you know, because when you play a preacher, you know, you get to, okay, Martin Luther King, you get to Malcolm X, not a preacher, but you know what I mean? That great orators, Jesse Jackson, you pull a few of those voices in and kind of throw them around and you throw in a kind of a gung-ho army guy and see what comes out. You know, and then Drew's there to kind of push and pull me in whichever direction that we feel is going to really suit the character. You know, sometimes I might have too much of one and not enough of the other. It's like, more preacher on this one. Oh, no, less preachy. You know, it just depends on the situation.
All right. From what we've seen, he just seems to have like this calm exterior with this inner rage getting ready to boil over. So it's fantastic.
To define that a little better, I just want, not better, but just to define it another way, seeing you get into character when we were recording some stuff earlier, like I said, you're scaring the hell out of me. I was like, I don't even know if I want to ask him a question. He might shoot me or something, you know?
I'm unarmed.
But is that kind of, right. But is that kind of the point of Pastor Jerome where, yeah, he's a pastor and he's about peace, but you push him too far, he will go over the edge.
I think that's exactly it. You push him too far and now he's gone back to what he knows how to do.
Right.
You know, this is not a place that he wanted to be. This is not a thing that he wanted to be doing, but it came to his county.
Right.
And this is the first time that you're meeting also the other voice actors, yes, for the first time. And the vibe has been good, man. The guys, man,
they're cool.
Yeah, super cool, man.
Everybody's just down with this. It's awesome, man. And I actually get to work with one of them next week. We're going to be doing a little bit more work. So kind of happy about that.
See, I'm glad you brought that up because I've always been so fascinated. I think I see another voice actor in the background. But I've always been fascinated about that process, especially in a video game where you do all this isolated. So, but is like the director, is there someone that you're literally bouncing this off of so you can kind of get into a flow of what you're saying?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes you're just in the booth by yourself and it's like read lines 1 through 25 and then 25 through 32. And sometimes the director or someone will just start bouncing the in between lines off you just so you get an actual flow. Yeah. You get a feel of somebody else yelling at you, soothing you, coddling you, whatever. It just depends on what you're giving and how everybody's feeling that day.
Okay, final thing before we go and wrap this up. And thank you for taking the time to do this. This has been fantastic. Like you said, you're about to do more additional work, you know, on the game and everything. So, again, since this is fictional, but, you know, you can kind of look at what's going on in the world right now. Are things being edited, you know, late in the process maybe to kind of alter some of the things that you're originally doing in the story?
Well, you're going to have to ask people that are at a higher pay grade than me.
Fair enough. Fair enough. But I'll say this though, as we wrap it up, and that's an amazing noise in the background,
isn't it?
Yeah. You know, this is what they're doing with Far Cry 5 and this whole Hope County story.
I love it because there's going to be some controversy to it.
It just is.
Oh, yeah.
And that's good. That's good to be able to take a fictional thing like this and apply some real world things to it and tell this kind of story.
Yeah. It is. And it just stands up that way. It stands out. And people go, what the? Oh, yeah. Let's give this a shot.
Yeah.
Let's give this another shot. Let's go back. I want to do this again. You know, it's cool that way.
Absolutely. So again, thank you for your time. We really appreciate it. And I'm really looking forward to Far Cry 5.
Thanks, guys. My pleasure. Totally.
Thanks a lot.
Back on the scene. This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
We're here with Murray Peters. You portray a character named Grace Armstrong on Far Cry 5. Thank you for being on the show. Appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Tell me a little bit about yourself and how you came across with Grace Armstrong's character.
I'm an actor. I'm living in Toronto, and this is my first video game, and you know, just my second voiceover thing. Going into this, I didn't necessarily think that. Because, you know, especially because I'm so new at this, I didn't think that this was going to be that big of a thing, you know? And even to be part of such a big project, like had I known, obviously at the beginning, I didn't know what the project was. It's given a code name or whatever, right? So even if it, at that point, had I known it was going to turn out to be such a big game or whatever, I would have thought, oh, you know, I'm probably just going to get, you know, a couple lines here or there, you know, maybe a couple days of work and that'll be it. Nobody will ever know I was in this game or anything to that extent. So, when I got my first script handed to me and I turned to the last page to see how many lines I've got, you know, and it says, you know, 1200 and something. I was like, oh, shit. I don't know if I'm ready to do this, but, yeah, no, it's been a great, great, great journey.
It took you a long time to really get into the character while reading the script?
I wouldn't say so. No, not really. I mean, I had a fairly clear idea of what I thought she was like. I kind of drew my inspiration from my former boxing coach. It's from Louisiana. And so, and she's kind of got this energy about her that's just very, like, she's, I don't know, she's a total badass or whatever, right? And, you know, like when I first met her, I was a little bit scared of her. And then as I got to know her, I was like, oh, okay, you're pretty cool. But then you get her pissed and you're like, oh, you know? And so I was like, that's sort of the energy that I wanted to bring to it and a similar kind of speech pattern and like melody to it. Yeah.
So, you know, again, you said you really didn't know much about what you were getting into until you read the script. So after you read the script and you kind of saw this fictional place of Hope County, and we're talking about cults and resistance and everything that's going on in there. So just, you know, on a personal level, I mean, what are your thoughts about that? I mean, cause obviously this is going to be a very controversial game when it comes out. So is this something that excited you even more when you realized what it was? Were you hesitant at all, or, you know, what was going through your head at the time?
I feel like this project has just been like nothing but excitement. And I think it's just like mounting with every step. And, you know, once I found out what it was about and like had more of an insight into, you know, the storyline and stuff like that, it was just, I think there's something exciting, I guess, about controversy and just like knowing that people are going to be talking about it and that'll help raise a conversation, you know, in the world. And, you know, people who might not necessarily be thinking about these things or talking about these things are going to be thinking about them and talking about them. And yeah, and I think that is really cool.
So I have to add in this as well. You know, when we were kind of going through some of the stuff early and you dropped girl on me, I was like, this is going to be a very strong character in the game. And being a very strong female character, I think, is very important for just diversity in video games and all that. And I know you said this is one of your first projects in video games, but, you know, being a female voice actor, I mean, is there any sense of pride in that, knowing that this is going to be the character that you're portraying is going to be portrayed as a strong person on, I guess, the television screen, so to speak, so that, you know, a lot of people that see this, I mean, you know, female gamers, it potentially could give them inspiration.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I've, you know, I've been kind of tweeting about the game and stuff like that. And I guess a couple of days ago, somebody had kind of like tweeted back about, you know, about like, they said that like their daughter had told them that they needed to buy the game because there was a sister as the main character. And I was like, oh my God, you're breaking my heart right now. I could cry. And so like, no, like those little things is just, you know, representation matters.
And how is it now meeting other voice actors for the first time?
Oh, it's been such a ride. Like everybody is just so, so amazing. You know, I was definitely a little bit anxious, I guess, coming here, like not necessarily knowing what to expect and figuring that I might be a little bit out of my element. And because I think out of the three of us here, I'm pretty sure I'm like the freshest, I guess, the greenest. And so, you know, not necessarily knowing how it would all go down, but everybody's just been super welcoming and yeah, they've made it easy.
Having a smaller career sample size, I guess, does that give you a little bit more range of being able to say, okay, well, maybe I can experiment and do more versus, you know, some, you know, maybe having like the rest of the voice actors, you know, they've got more experiences to draw on. So that you, do you feel that maybe you can experiment more and be a little more creative?
I see why you would think that, because there's that kind of like, oh, well, if you don't necessarily have like a quote unquote reputation or whatever, then you can kind of make your own story or whatever. Right. But, I think for me anyways, there was a little bit of, I don't know, I guess fear. And, you know, having this being my first time voicing a video game character of like, okay, what am I allowed to do? What am I not allowed to do? And like figuring out, you know, testing those bounds and figuring out what the parameters are. So I guess that's been a kind of a cool experience. Yeah, but it's all just like exploration. And the more sessions I have, the more comfortable I get with it. And the more I'm willing to just like play around and throw out some like line suggestions and like little tweaks and be like, I don't think my character would say that, or like, or maybe she would, but in a different way.
Did you have a little more license on your character when in instances like that, it's like, well, did you have more say and be like, well, I don't feel that, you know, Grace would have said it like that. Did you have an opportunity to ad lib, and were any of those actually accepted?
Yeah. Especially when I first started, when I first showed up, the director was very much like, hey, you know, this is a very collaborative space, so feel free to just like play around or whatever. And, you know, of course the first couple of days I was a little bit anxious. And so it was like, unless they specifically asked me to like try something different, I would just kind of stick to what was on the page. But you know, the further along that I got with it, the more that I was like, okay, I'm seeing little things here and there, and it'd be like, oh, is it okay if I say this instead? And, you know, we just try it, and if it worked, it worked. If not.
So the comfort level was there after a while.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome.
Well, I just want to say thanks.
Yeah, of course.
Great conversation and great job.
Thank you. Thank you.
Really good skills, man. Yeah, thanks a lot.
All right. Take
it out. You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
Here with Steve Byers. You portray a character by the name of Nick Rye in the upcoming Ubisoft game, Far Cry 5. Tell me about, do you personally relate to the character in the game?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think Nick is, if I may be so bold to say, I think he's really one of the true hearts of the game, because this is a first person shooter, and you have people around you, notably the villains and the cult itself. This is one of the first ones of the franchise where you have people who you get to know and help you out, not just like, hey, what's up? These people are there to help you. And Nick is motivated by the fear of his wife, which is love. But he's got a child on the way, which he found out about. And I happen to have two little girls myself. So I think for people who don't have kids, that motivation, that the way it alters your perspective of the world is tantamount to why you do what you do. And so for me, as soon as I read it and I found out that Nick was conflicted about doing what he was doing, but ultimately he was doing it to save the future of his kid. I was like, yeah, bam. Yeah, I get that.
This is not your first video game.
No.
Okay, so did it took you a long time to get into that character?
Nick?
Of Nick, yeah.
No, I mean, you know, when they approached me and said that this was the character and this is what's going on, I did some research, obviously, and looked up, you know, they said it was generally set in Montana, and, you know, and I didn't have too much information at the time. So I started watching YouTube videos and that sort of thing, as one does. And, it's a little website. You might have heard of it. Yeah, YouTube. But they have all these interviews and all sorts of people from Montana. And you really get the understanding that these people are passionate people and they care about their place. And, they're driven by both the place that they live, because it's a frontier. Like it's an expanse. It's a beautiful expanse, but it's also their expanse. So you really get that sense. And I think it helps you build the character immediately, and it gives you something to work from.
They also did research of airplanes, pilots, and stuff like that too.
Well, you know, it's funny. A little tidbit for you guys. I haven't told anybody this. In the game, when you're capturing, performance capturing in the volume, they call it, they build you really basic props. So it's built out of like pipes and plywood, but the cameras have to be able to see through them to capture the data. 'Cause we're all in scuba suits with balls on them and a helmet. But they have to still build them according to specs. So when you put this data into the game, and we're talking thousands of people that are doing the work to make this all happen, but when they put you in the game, if I'm walking on an elevated surface, it's got to look like proper. I mean, they can tweak things, obviously, but it's got to look right. And one of the times that we were working, the plane initially was a different plane. So it was built very different, and we captured a bunch of stuff. And then when they went to enter the data, they were like, no, that's not the way the plane looks anymore. And they couldn't make it work. So we actually had to go back and reshoot all that, which is expensive and, you know, it's time consuming, but, it's a real sort of insight into how detailed it all really is. Yeah.
So I actually bring that up, which I didn't even realize till you mentioned it. So you did a lot of the actual performance for It's Good, not just the voice stuff.
Yeah. All of it. The thing about, I don't know if you saw the character intro of Nick Rye.
Yeah, I've seen it.
So yeah, I know when my wife saw it, she was like, oh, okay, that's the guy you voiced. Oh yeah. And I was like, yeah, no, that, come on. I picked up that wrench. Like I walked over, touched the plane. I got in the plane. And the thing is I think a lot of people don't realize that there's so much more than just building the character. I mean, there is the voice, obviously, and that's what people relate the character to, obviously. But there is bringing that life and the breath and the technology that these cameras are capturing. You can see the tiniest little chest movements. So when the data goes wrong, the whole thing has to be redone. It's really cool.
How much history of like Montana did you have to research? Like, I mean, you know, you're from Canada, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is there a major difference in like philosophical, you know, mental, just like, did you have to draw upon like different experiences or people that you've met in the past when you came up with the character for, you know, how he was going to act and talk?
Well, I mean, obviously there's a certain local element to it. You want to try and be as true to what people will want the accent to be and that sort of thing. So that was part of the whole research, but it's a very superficial thing. 'Cause at the end of the day, I mean, Peter Dinklage people are letting go with his accent on Game of Thrones, but they love him because the guy's charming as hell, right? And so I think it's more about the character you build, and you hope that haters aren't going to hate all of your stuff, and that they like the stuff that you bring. And so for that reason, I mean, I cared not to offend people and slaughter it, but at the same time, I wanted to make him part of me, but also part of Montana. So hopefully that happened.
So, you know, you mentioned earlier just about getting into the character. You did research and everything, and when they approached you about it, so obviously you read the script and everything. This is fictional, Hope County, but there's some real world elements in there. So, I mean, kind of just on a personal level, how do you feel about that controversy? And when the game comes out, is this something that you're going to look at and say, wow, we really nailed this. This is going to be a hot button item that I want a lot of people to see beyond just it's a video game. What the actual message of what they're trying to say, you know, in Far Cry 5.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really fortuitous, serendipitous, really, that because remember, this game's been being worked on for 3-4 years right now. And the basic elements of it were in play long before what the world is right now. And I think that although it falls in a very interesting time period, we'll call it that. It's a very topical game, but I think ultimately it's going to be an amazing game. I mean, I'm proud of it. I've been a fan of the franchise. I'm a player, and the fact that this what it's turning out to be is amazing, and I'm proud to be a part of it.
Just want to say thanks. It was a great conversation.
Yeah, and, man.
Man, you guys are pretty good, man, with the whole voice acting, man.
Yeah, like, yeah it's really fascinating to watch you in the background, too, to watch you, like, literally just jump right into character. Like, I was like, oh.
Because you know what? You know what? It's like I really got into it. So I can imagine someone that is listening or watching this, like, it's going to be good. It's going to be good.
Cool, man.
Yeah. I can just say as we're wrapping this up, just between the three of you as we got to sit down with you and talk, like, I've gone from fear, intimidation, and this true understanding of what the character Nick is like. Because, like, I brought up that question to you about the whole wife thing. Why don't you just put her on there and get out of there? Because in my head, I was thinking, if I tried to put my wife on there, it was like, right? Oh, hell no, we're not going anywhere. So I was actually glad to hear you answer it that way.
Cool. Thanks.
Really excited for Farcraft.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks, guys.
And shout out to Boomer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Thanks, man.
Check it out. You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
All right, so we're back here at Gamertag Radio, our 700th episode. That was an exclusive podcast interview with the voice cast of Far Cry 5. All right. Thanks to Ubisoft. And speaking of Ubisoft, I have to mention this very quick because probably a lot of people don't know about this. So one of the reasons why we couldn't stream and record our 700 episode last week was because, you know, one was Hurricane Irma, you know, Pete, there was no power in his area. I got power and so on. But also our family dog that has been around now for like almost 11 years. He was going to turn 11 years next month. He passed away and it was very difficult for us. This whole week, you know, and it was very, very cool to get a message from Ubisoft like, hey, Danny, can we get your address? We want to send you something. So I was like, I thought it was like a game, you know, like I thought we were going to get like a game to review or something. And they sent us flowers for my family and I, man. So that was very, very nice of them with a message, you know, talking about Marlene and all that stuff. So that was very, very cool. And especially my sister-in-law, she was like, she almost cried, man, seeing that. You know, she's like, wow, I didn't know that there's people out there that really care about you. You know, that was super nice of them, man. So thank you to Ubisoft. And everybody has been sending me messages, man. It's been just a very tough week for us. And, you know, and sometimes when I record, you hear Marley barking here and there out of nowhere in the past when we record our past episodes and everything, man. So I truly miss him. It's just been a very tough week for all of us, man.
No, so, and then
just want to say that
absolutely, and it shows that this is much more than just the games, right? At the end of the day, mm-hmm. you know,
it is. It is
the friendships and bonds that we've grown to gather throughout these years, throughout the 700 episodes, whether it be personal, online, things like that, just goes to show that there's those that you can always that you can turn to as friends, dude. I mean, I wouldn't have you two as some of my brothers, you know, if it wasn't for these games. And then seeing, you know, what Ubisoft, damn, I'm starting to get choked up here. Seeing what Ubisoft did earlier in this week goes to show that, you know, at the end of the day, it's so much more than just video games. And like, we all get on rants and we get on each other, but I mean, that goes to show that there's just nothing but love out there. You know, and shout out to the whole Ubisoft team for doing that, man.
Yeah. Oof.
No, just be hard, man.
Yeah, take a minute, man. I mean, let me jump in. So, you know, we're all family. You know, I love you two guys. You are literally the brothers I've never had. I mean, you really are. It isn't. Look, I'll even give this inside baseball. We got into it yesterday, but that's what brothers do. You know what I mean? But it doesn't matter because, Danny, you know I always got your back. Mm-hmm. Pete, you know I always got your back.
Absolutely.
It's not even a question whether we're high-fiving today or yelling at each other tomorrow. The past couple weeks have been tough for all of us for various reasons. Obviously, this isn't the place to get too in-depth on that other than to just say, you know, I know we always have each other. And what Ubisoft did, that's why I'm here. I mean, it is because we do this show. We talk about video games, which is amazing that we're even in a position to do this. But all the amazing people that we get to meet because we do this. Tanya's in the chat right now. Reef is in the chat right now. You know, Corey, I don't know if he's even still here. Corey's here. It's these kind of people that we get to meet and get to interact with is why I love doing this so much. And is why I will always, as long as I'm able, I'm going to do this. And why we'll, all three of us are going to be able to do this because it's the people, man. It's not the games. It's the people. The games are just something that gets us together to actually interact with each other. But it's once we have that interaction with those people, it's why we stay, you know. Yeah. There's going to be good times. There's going to be bad times. There's going to be frustrating times. We're going to, like I said, we're going to hug it out. We're going to yell at each other. It's all going to happen because at the end of the day, it's family, man. And all of us are family. Everyone that's in the Twitch chat right now, people are listening to this. You may not like what we have to say all the time, or you may agree with what we say all the time. Doesn't matter. Yeah. We're all in this together. We are. And I don't even know what else to say other than that. Just we're in this together. You know, I love you guys. I think you love me too. Sometimes you're probably like, yeah, he's one angry son of a gun. Why is he so angry all the time? But that's just who we are, man. And, you know, it's there's no other words for it. I'm sure people listening to this are getting it. And,
keeping it 100, just keeping it 100. It's all love. It's all love.
Yeah.
Yep. It is. It really is. And let me say this. Let me say this real quick, because this is the first time we all got back together. That's the whole thing when we went to PAX. PAX was so great because we got to put that face to face with so many people we interact with on social media. And it was such a great time. I mean, it was like the ultimate high school reunion. You know what I mean? We're all just meeting these people that we've interacted with for so long. And then you finally get to talk to them face to face. And it's like we've known each other for years anyways, even though it's the first time you're physically standing next to that person. And that's what's great about this community, man. And that's why I try to, you know, I try to keep it real and I try to be honest about if I love or hate stuff. But at the end of the day, it's why I try to. I always want to promote things the positive stuff, not the negative stuff. Not the, we talk about PewDiePie. Like, this is actually a great way to end it. We started off with the negative nonsense of PewDiePie, but let's end it on a positive thing of community and family and the good things that come out of this whole gaming industry, man, and not the bad stuff.
Yeah. I totally agree, man. Sorry, I was trying to control myself, man. I told myself, "Not, Danny, don't cry. Don't cry."
It's all good.
But
it's
all good. It's hard, man. It's hard. It's hard. But yeah, I'm just going to wrap it up here. This was episode 700 here at GamertagRadio.com. Go to GamertagRadio.com and listen to our past episodes. Or play that it/gamertag. And also, you can watch us live every week on Twitch. For more information, go to twitch.tv/gamertagradio. Probably going to be streaming some NBA Live and so on. And by the way, I have this here. Let me see if I can find it. I have the new Metroid game, Samus Return, here for the Nintendo 3DS. I can't wait to start playing that a little bit more later. And that's about it. It's 701 is coming out this Thursday. We're going out of town this later this week, but I think we could stream Wednesday night. We'll be here streaming and stuff. So, but yeah, tune in. We have some cool stuff coming, man. So, and by the way, Pete, we have to talk about our experience in the future about checking out Ghost Recon.
Mm-hmm.
We could do that in the future.
Absolutely.
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. We got to get the squad going on. Sorry, Danny, but Pete, we got to get the squad going on PC.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Where's Beaker? Where's Beaker? Let's get Beaker and rest of them. Let's do it.
I'm hyped to jump into that PvP. Dude. It looks right up my alley, man.
We'll talk about that more. So you didn't get to play it, but oh my God.
Save it for the show.
Just gonna leave it like, oh my God.
Save it for the show. Save for the show.
Oh my God.
All right. Save for the show. All right. So, check us out. Until next time, we're out. Peace.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free. Select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.